Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. You can earn 4 times points on your top 2 eligible spending categories every month, like transit, U.S. restaurants, and gas stations. That's the powerful backing of American Express. 4 times points on up to $150,000 in purchases per year. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Freaking first cut. Golly!
Welcome to the First Cut Podcast. I'm Rick Gaiman, and today a very normal conversation about golf. Joining me to break it all down, Patrick McDonald is here. Patrick, good day.
Good day, fellas. Good to see you guys. The unorthodox Wednesday episode, it's got me a little jazzed up.
How do you usually spend your Wednesdays?
You don't want to know, man. Yeah, that's between me and God.
I actually don't really want to know.
When Patrick tells you you don't want to know, you trust him on that.
Yeah,
that's what I've learned. Greg Ducharme is here. Hello, Greg.
Hello, boys. Excited about today's episode, about the topic today anyway. Really looking forward to getting into that. So other than that, not much on the plate. Been a little bit of a whirlwind in the game of golf. I'm sure some of these conversations will come up, but excited to be back with the boys.
Yeah, we're going to have a little fun today. Kyle Porter is here, the man of the hour, the author of Normal Sport 3, which is now available in, KP, correct me here if I get anything wrong, a digital copy, that's your PDF, an audio book, and also a paperback. Those are the three options, correct?
That's correct. You can also buy previous editions, the PDFs of previous editions. This is the shortest one we've done, which is something that we can talk about a little bit. But yeah, anormalsport.com. Pick it up, read it, listen to it. However you, whatever you want to do to it, you're free to do to it.
Yeah, very, very well.
Burn it, whatever. I'm sure there's some live bots that would like to burn it.
As long as they pay for it, they can do whatever they want with it, right?
Great. Burn the books, baby.
Sweet. The very consumable Normal Sport 3 looks a little bit different than other editions. But KP, let's back this up a little bit. I mean, the idea that you took a Twitter joke, Twitter, you know, thing.
Bit.
And, yeah, a bit, and turned it into not one, not two, but three different books, LeBron James style. Pretty unfathomable, but here we are.
Yeah, it is crazy. You know, it's every time I thought it was just going to like peter out, I was thinking about this recently, Rick, like the idea of golf in general, that we just took over these sheep fields and like goat fields for like our sport is just like even the origin of it is like ridiculous, right? And so it's almost like just part of the fabric of the sport, and so it just kind of keeps on going, you know, like it's just part of like the whole deal. And I know that, you know, people tweet at me like normal sport moments from other sports like baseball or college football or whatever, which is hilarious, and it's like, yeah, that's cool, but like it's not what, like golf is like the original normal sport back in the 1400s when we said, yeah, these sheep that were grazing here, you guys can move along because we're going to hit a ball around this field, right? Like, that's absurd. And now it's turned into three books that I've written.
Yeah, it's really awesome. And the thing that I, you know, I was just watching golf today and they were showing the PGA Championship highlights, and it was when Corey Connors drilled it into the lip of that bunker on 16, and no one knew where it was, and then 9 people were kneeling down looking around, and my wife goes like, what are they doing? I'm like, you don't even want to know. Like there's just totally something normal going on here. It's don't worry about it.
Yeah. And you get how many of those every week? You know, one of the funny things about the whole bid is that it's kind of crowdsourced now. Like people will just, I don't even have to look for it. People just, every time there's something like on the Asian tour or European tour while I'm asleep, I'll wake up to 10 tweets about like, here's so-and-so moving a tree out of the forest in, you know, Taiwan so that he can pitch out. And you've got just stuff like that all the time. So it's been fun to see people kind of catch on to it and and write a couple books about it.
Patrick, you fire off plenty of tweets. You fire up CBSSports.com. You've got the keyboard underneath your fingers. Have you considered writing a book?
Once or twice, but I think a question I did want to ask Kyle was, is there any like, not hesitancy, but just like going back and writing about stuff you have already written about, like some like dread almost, I want to say, like, oh, I wrote about like I liked your piece about Brooks Koepka at the PGA Championship. Is there some dread like, oh, I don't know if I can write as good about Brooks Koepka the second time around or anything like that from writer to writer?
Yeah, I think so. And that was sort of why I did it a little bit differently this year. I basically just went through, because like when I was, yeah, the answer is yes. Like when I started going back through everything, I was like, oh my gosh, there's so much over the last year. I can't go through every detail. I don't want to like quote myself a bunch. So I tried to make it almost like a glorified Twitter thread this year where I was just looking at old tweets from you guys, from like stuff that I tweeted out and just trying to like build on that a little bit. And I think that made it less like I dreaded that part of it less, because I'm not trying to write, when I write the book, I'm not trying to write the piece in it that will go viral because it was like super emotional and like I was wrapped up in it. I'm really trying to be like punchy and like quick getting through it. There's still like some deeper stuff in there, but that's, I don't know if any of that makes sense, but that's sort of the way that I viewed it. What would you write a book about, Patrick?
I don't know. I think I kind of want to do like a children's book, just like slowly. First, I probably need a child to know kind of the market a little more, because I'm not going to read those by myself. But
that'd be weird.
I think kind of just easing my way into it with some sort of animation fiction would be the way I would attack it.
When you say children, do you mean like a book that, because this is something that I've thought about, is it a book that a parent would read to their kids, or a book that when your kid's old enough they could read? Like, did you guys read Matt Christopher books growing up?
No.
Nobody?
No. I read Goosebumps.
Yeah. Kind of the same. Yeah. Same era, but yeah. Sports.
Yeah. It'd be like, I think the age, like 5 to 8, 6 to 8, kind of. Not like you're reading it to a baby, but like children when they can read.
So right. Like when they get to a reading age, writing it for them.
Correct.
Okay.
Are you, Greg, your two boys, where are they at? Are they reading? Your oldest might be reading, right? Or are you still reading to them?
Still reading to them. Okay. Every night. My oldest is in kindergarten.
Oh, okay.
So he's learning how to read. Got it. Picking out words and all that stuff, which blows me away that he even can. You know, every time he picks something out, or, you know, this is they're 3 years apart. So reading books for them, they're at very different ages, and my youngest will get really distracted if we read a book that doesn't have a lot of pictures in it.
Me too.
But when it, right, it's one of the beauties of Normal Sport 3.
Yeah, that's why I illustrated it. It was for Rick.
Yeah. But the other thing is, when I read books that my 2-year-old can enjoy, my oldest can read a lot of the pages, which is kind of shocking to see. Because he's still so young in my eyes, but he all of a sudden is reading a page on command, like sounding out words. It's just, it's a wild ride. So I like the idea of children's books, Patrick, but and it seems like it'd be an easy thing to do, but something tells me it wouldn't be.
Okay. Well, now that we're talking about children, no dumb questions on this podcast. Safe what, space. What's like the typical timeline for them? Like their milestones? I have no idea. Like when do they walk? When do they, you know, wipe their butt for the first time? When do they start reading? Stuff like that. I have no idea.
The three most important: walking, reading, wiping your butt.
Yeah, I think walking is usually between 1 and 2 years of age, right, Greg?
Yeah, me. Some kids are a little earlier. Both my boys were right around, like almost right on a year.
Yeah.
Okay, Greg.
Okay. Yeah. What a flex, Greg. Okay, buddy.
Well, for me, I took my first steps a little earlier than that.
Well, by one, you were backing people down in Nerf basketball. So we know that.
My fadeaways were. I was learning my fadeaways back then.
Ice of Fire was already dialed at like 15 months. Wipe your butt is like between 4 and 5, probably.
I'll let you know when I get there.
Okay. Like personally or for your And then what was the last one? Reading is kind of all over the map. Like it can be, I mean, 4 to whenever, right? Like or 3
four
maybe.
To present.
Yeah. I mean, it's that one has the I think the widest variance there. What else you got, Patrick?
Do you guys remember Hooked on Phonics?
Oh yeah.
That's how I learned to read.
Really?
Yeah.
I remember the commercials for it.
Hooked on Phonics worked for me. That's the commercial.
Do you remember Mavis Beacon teaches typing or Where in the World is Carmen Sandiego? You're probably too young for this, Patrick.
Patrick, this is way out of Patrick's age now.
Yeah. Anyway, Patrick, your idea is good because I think there's such a an opportunity for I've thought about this a lot. There's such an opportunity to introduce kids that are my kids and Greg's kids' ages into golf. Like there's not a great on-ramp for them, honestly. Like you can't just, I guess you could have them listen to the First Cut podcast because it's pretty clean, but they wouldn't understand it, right? Like they wouldn't get what we were talking about. And I think that there's not enough out there to get them into as a bridge between like knowing nothing and listening to the First Cut podcast.
It starts with go to the range with your dad, go to the golf course with your dad, drive the cart, which is a very old school kind of way of doing things. And, you know, comparatively, if like my wife ran a book fair this year at my son's school. And so I was over there looking at the books. There's a ton of kids' basketball books, Michael Jordan comic books, football Tom Brady books.
Mm-hmm.
Colin Kaepernick book, like all kinds of sports books, but none for golf.
Yeah.
So maybe we just found a niche.
Riches and niches.
That is very true. The normal sport three, I'll get us back on track here. That's quite all right. That was a good path to go down. KP, I keep using the word consumable because this does not look like 1 and 2. 1 and 2 had dedicated chapters, whether it was Jon Rahm, whether it was a specific event or a major championship, the Ryder Cup, whatever that might be. This is literally just 250 plus thoughts, and some of them with appendix, right? Some of them with stats, some of them are just a few sentences. And I find it a lot easier to be like, okay, I've read 25. I'm going to put this down. And I know when I pick this back up tomorrow, I know exactly where I'm going to start off.
Yeah. I tried to write, I got to credit Jason Page who illustrated the book, because whenever I went to him in October and I was like, man, I was like, I feel overwhelmed thinking about kind of what Patrick brought up, which is like going through every single thing that happened over the last 10 months and rewriting it, or not rewriting, but like writing basically documenting it. And he's like, well, just write down your thoughts. And so I tried to almost make it, Rick, like, you know how we're at tournaments together and we just get each other's kind of unfiltered thoughts, takes, opinions for like 5 straight days. Mm-hmm. That's kind of what it's not as unfiltered, but that's kind of what I tried to make it feel like as I wrote those thoughts down. So I'm glad it comes across like that, because that was very much my intent.
It's a really fine line creating workout clothes that are great in the gym and workout clothes that are also great to look at outside the gym. And Vuori has threaded that needle. They are designed to work out in, but they don't look like it. They don't feel like it. And it's incredibly comfortable stuff, whether you are running, training, swimming, doing yoga, running errands, lounging around the house. It really doesn't matter. These are versatile clothes. You'll find me often in the men's Sunday performance jogger because I like the jogger situation that goes on down at the bottom, but they're very comfortable. They've got a little bit of a shorter inseam, so they're not as bulky as other pants or other joggers that I have seen out there. And I've really enjoyed how they work both in and out of the gym. So now here's what you can do for our listeners. First-time purchasers are getting 20% off. All you have to do is go to Vuori.com/first. That's Vuori.com/first. Again, not only will you receive 20% off your first order, but enjoy free shipping on any U.S. orders over $75. And here's my favorite part, free returns. Yeah, go check it out. Vuori.com/first and discover the versatility of Vuori clothing. Did you know more than 75% of Americans will experience foot pain in their lifetime, but only 10% will seek out a solution for that pain? Spoiler alert, your feet don't have to hurt, and I know foot biomechanics can be complex, but solving foot pain should be simple. It's a signature orthotic shape of the super feet insoles that give you the comfort and support where you need it the most. It redistributes and reduces stress and strain on your entire body. Think about those long walks on a golf course and how uncomfortable your feet can get. Well, they don't have to, and Superfeet has helped millions of people worldwide experience the life-changing magic of comfy, pain-free feet. When your feet feel good, so do you. It is one of the most important parts of your overall health and well-being. And for a limited time, Superfeet is having its biggest sale of the year. Go to superfeet.com to save 25% off site-wide and get free shipping. Hurry, sale pricing ends June 5th. Yeah, there is like this weird thing that goes on at events when you're there for 12 hours and five straight days and everybody's throwing out everything and some things get, you know, dove into and some get laughed at. And it's kind of a weird process. I want to kind of just pick out a couple of these because I don't want to give this away for free. Go open your wallets for this. But the most incredible moment to me of the year, is pointed out in number 90, which number is
90. That was Masters or right before?
It was Masters.
Okay.
And refers to the tree falling on 17.
Uh-huh.
And Kyle makes a point here, going back and watching every angle, how disastrous it could have been and how big of a story it could have been. And to me, Patrick, kind of before we get KP's thoughts on this, and Greg, I'd love to hear your thoughts too. The idea that something that never a tree falling on a golf course, we don't see that. To see it at a major event with tens of thousands of people, not only does no one get hurt, but also they have it cleaned up. I've never seen so many chainsaws in 15 minutes. They had this thing cleaned up almost immediately. That could have really been disastrous. And I feel like it is story number 10,000 of the year.
Oh, people, like multiple people could have said sayonara, bury me around Amen Corner. And the fact that no one was even injured, even touched, is crazy. I mean, look at the bottom of that bad boy. That is massive. That is a huge tree. And honestly, spoiler, Rick, I totally forgot about this. I'm not at 90 yet. But it was pretty funny, like on the internet that day, people kind of putting on their detective cap, going through the Getty images, going through various like really grainy videos from like master.com cameras and stuff like that to piece everything together. And the fact that one, no one got hurt, two, they're able to clean that up so quickly is just like really Augusta National to a T, it seems like. It is a bizarre moment from what was kind of a bizarre weekend at the Masters too.
You know, the other thing about this that struck me, and by the way, Patrick, you just mentioned I had completely forgotten about this. This is the beauty of the entire book.
Yes.
There are things from, well, let's see.
Like fake Scott Stallings.
Yeah.
It's the first note I made when I was reading. The Scott Stallings thing was, and what thought was that, Kyle? Like three?
Like four. Yeah, it was early. It was
right away.
10, yeah.
So there are so many of those where I can't believe that happened. And then when it comes to this one here at Augusta, this is the most famous golf course in the world with the most famous trees of any golf course in the world. I mean, they talk about it every year, how trees are added and trees are planted and trees like this size are brought in and added. And to have one of them fall down on TV is unimaginable. And then you add in that nobody is injured. And it was basically the reason we forget about it is because it was a no factor.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that was sort of my point in there, is it could have obviously been, it could have been bad. And I think what's really weird, and this is part of the reason I write the book, is this happens every week, but it especially happens at majors, is so many things take place that you just move right past because you got to get to the, I mean, you don't have to, but you get to the next thing and you're like, once you go back, and this is what, like, I have a love-hate relationship with Twitter, Rick. I love it as a repository for ideas, thoughts, takes, like remembering things. It's just very easy to search to be like, oh yeah, fake Scott Stallings. That was crazy that somebody who's not Scott Stallings got Scott Stallings' Masters invite in the mail. That's like the definition of normal sport. When would a normal like banker, plumber, electrician ever be invited to the NBA finals? Right? Like that's outrageous. And yet this guy that lives, I think he lived in Augusta, was invited to play in the Masters. Now he didn't get to because he wasn't actually the Scott Stallings that he was referring to, but just stuff like that is a great like thing to, I think Antti Fauto said that the book is like, it's great for remembering, oh yeah, that didn't that happen before COVID? Oh no, that happened in August, like 3 months ago. Which I thought was a hilarious way to look at it.
Yeah, that's the real beauty of this, is being able to remember all of the things that might have been in your brain for a minute or a month, but here they are all in a book. Are you, KP, throughout this process, you know, is there an active idea of remembering things throughout the year, or are you trying to get to the end of the year, look back and say, these are the 250 most important thoughts that I had? Or are you seeing something in March and saying, oh, that's definitely going to be in the book?
Well, there was a moment at the US Open this year. Remember when Cam Young hit a ball in a golf cart, ball holder or ball, like little thing in the golf cart?
Yes, I do. Mm-hmm.
I remember tweeting like, this is going to be a whole chapter in Normal Sport 3, kind of joking it. And it turned out to be just one thought because we didn't do chapters, but there are moments throughout the year that you're like, well, that's going to be in the book, but I'm actively trying to not think about that because I think it takes away from like the present coverage of it. I want to be like present in the moment, like talking about what's going on in the here and now, and then retroactively. And this is part of why I do it at the end of the year, is because you can look back and say, oh, well, that thing that I thought was important, it turned out to not really matter that much at all. Right. And so you can kind of pick and choose like, oh, these things actually did matter. Or this was even more, Phil finishing second at the Masters is even more ridiculous in retrospect than it was in the moment. And we thought it was crazy in the moment because Phil sucked in 2023. And yet he finished what, four back of the Masters champion, which is completely crazy. So yeah, I like not considering it until we get to September, October, because I think that makes for a better like retrospective experience.
Yeah. Well, you have more information, right? I mean, you totally have these guys, yes, that, something that, especially in years like this, something that someone might have said in February might have been completely different than what actually happens in July, August, and September. And if you spend a lot of time and energy on something earlier in the year, it might have been wrong. It might have been a waste of time. It might have been, yeah, it is interesting that it's actually better to look back on it.
I want to go around the room. I'll give you guys a second to think about this. I'll vamp with my own thought on it, but just everybody's favorite normal sport moment that they remember from the year. Just one, the first one that comes to mind. I think mine is probably, there's so many of them. And like June 6th was probably the most like meaningful one, but the most ridiculous one, or one of the most ridiculous ones, was Phil Mickelson selling capes at one point, like hawking capes at a golf tournament and talking earnestly about the benefits of them, how kids all over the world are going to wear them. And I think that Phil is, he's become a little bit of a cartoon character, but like people just kind of ate it up. Like people on the live side kind of ate it up. People on the not live side were like, this is among the ridiculous things he's done, this might be the most ridiculous. That one is up there for me. Like Phil selling capes or trying to like promote capes at a live golf event.
Go ahead, Greg.
All right, I'm ready. So I got two in mind. One, I didn't remember until I read the book. And this is another live guy, but Patrick Reed using binoculars to look up into a tree. Because I had completely forgotten about it. And reading that in, and the image in that one, you got to see that. It's fantastic. And then the second one, which kind of came to life in the last couple of weeks for me, was the St. Andrews renovation of the bridge. and everybody's reaction to it. Okay. Right? I mean, this is not a thing against St. Andrews, but the reaction to the golf that the golf world had to this was so normal.
They were bullied into changing it back.
Yes.
So if
just
you think
on our patio,
if 250 years ago, or even how old's Twitter, even 20 years ago, if they had done that 20 years ago, it would now have probably lived for another 500 years.
Yeah.
And that would have been the Swolken Bridge that everybody knows and loves, right?
But instead you got Glute Activator and Antifado bullying the Royal and Ancient into removing this rock formation.
Do you think the same people that they hired to patio it had to come unpatio it?
Yes,
because they have to make a phone call that says, hey guys, you did a great job. You did
you been on Twitter?
You did exactly what we asked of you. But like 4 days later, I'm going to need you to come and take this out.
Edit, undo.
Yeah, exactly. Control Y or Option Y, whatever. Josh, producer Josh has a photo of it up on YouTube right now. It doesn't actually look that bad.
I think it looks nice. But touching something that's like hundreds of years old like that is...
In the moment, it would be like the golf... architect equivalent of being like, yeah, we're gonna like tear down 12 at Augusta and just kind of redo it, just right. Like reshape it, see what happens, right. You're like, yeah, I don't know, that's a great idea.
But at the same time, this is why golf's the original normal sport,
because yeah,
if you took the bench of an NFL game, right, and did some, you know, made the benches
the tunnel
decker, made them a tunnel, put dugouts on an NFL stadium, or put baseball.
These are all great ideas, by the way.
I had to.
If you took a dugout in baseball and put it above ground and just had a normal bench, would people have this kind of reaction?
No. That's what I'm saying. That's
it's
exactly
not part of the course.
Yeah, that's the definition of, like, you know what used to be where that patio is, Greg? Bunch of sheep taking dumps right there. Like that was what used to be there, and nobody said anything about it. And then we started playing golf there, and all of a sudden you can't put a bunch of stones down. It was absurd.
I feel bad for the guy who fired off the tweet, like, I took this beautiful photo, I've got everything in frame, people are gonna love this, I'm gonna announce this, it's gonna be awesome. And just instant,
that did not go well.
Have you
just completely on brand for Greg to bring that back up? Of course, you know,
I forgot about it.
Yeah. Well, it's why one of the reasons why it struck me. It really struck a chord with me.
Greg's
I'll put it to you this way. This was not its original design.
No, yeah, that's true.
That's correct. Patrick, do you have one from this year?
I have two, and you brought up tweeting. I think a tweet from someone in this room was a normal sport moment. Yeah, I'm looking at you, Rick. Riviera,
oh.
Tiger Woods, Justin Thomas has returned to competition, and Tiger Woods has a thought to, you know, bring a woman's product in his golf bag just in case he outdrives Justin Thomas. Absurd.
I actually wrote about this in the book, and I turned it into a compliment to Rick, which I don't know if any of y'all have read it yet, but we've talked about this on here. It was such a Rick asked me, like, can I send it? And I was like, I think it's okay. And then I wouldn't retweet.
Yeah, you would not retweet it. I kept texting him like, "What? Retweet it? You said it was okay. You said I'd be fine with this. I thought that meant I had your immediate retweet.
Okay, but for you to tweet that.
Yeah,
but it looks good on you. I was like, you need to turn your phone off because it's about to get crazy. But the compliment to Rick was, he does a great job of. Being that photo was available for anybody to find and tweet out on Getty. He does a great job of being very thorough with everything that he does. And I think that is such a lesson to the 21-year-old that's in sports media at Boston College or Clemson or Miami or wherever. Is like, hey, just because you have a big following and like a good job doesn't mean you shouldn't continue to be super, super thorough and comb through every interview, every transcript, every photo to find stuff that matters. That's a dumb example because that didn't matter. I mean, it was ridiculous, but I thought it was emblematic of this this bigger thing, which I think Rick is very good at.
Well, thank you. The thing that I go back to that a lot where, you know, Tiger Woods hasn't played in 9 months or whatever it was at the time. He announces the week before while we're at Phoenix that he's going to play Riviera. I imagine him getting the bag ready, throwing his, you know, Bridgestones in there, making sure he's got the right shoes and going, looking at I got JT on, you know, Thursday and Friday. Okay, let me go find something for him. And my wife's like, they have not made like that style of tampon in like 20 years. So he has dug up some like old, where does Tiger Woods even go to find this? I just think the whole
thing. So you're saying he didn't go to CVS.
No, he didn't like buy a new box or anything. Right. Like it's just so, there's so many. And then he finally, 9 holes in, finally gets his moment to pull the trigger on out driving JT and he goes for it. Like the whole thing's insane.
Yeah, you start to unwind that and it makes even less sense than it did. And it's just, you know, part of me is like, well, yeah, this is the kind of humor that Tiger engages in. Like, what did you expect there? What was your other one, Patrick?
Well, I actually just thought of another. So
that's
the point of the show.
the U.S. Open, just the Playboy Mansion, watching it on TV, and guys are hitting drives, and there's just like monkeys in the background and birds just right across the fence, and then just
feral animals all over the place.
And then no fans, though, of course. Don't get me started on LACC. I'll go on a Greg Vendetta type rant. the next one is Tom Kim at Oak Hill.
Yeah,
go in just full mud boy mode, taking it off, finishing the round. That was probably the top of the year for me.
Yeah, that's in the book. That got its own illustration, got its own thought. That was great.
I want to talk about the illustrations in a second, but the one that I have, and I'm not even sure it made it into the book, KP, because it was kind of personal. I was just trying to do a control F and find it, but. When we were at Phoenix and we had our setup on the back of the range with those two porta potties. Is this in the book?
No, but you can tell it.
Okay. So we're our stage that we have for CBS Sports is on the back of the range. There's two porta potties that are inside the ropes. They're supposed to be for like players or like crew or whatever. And we are sitting there. No, I don't know what it was. It was Friday or Saturday.
I think it was Saturday. It
must have been Saturday because the conversation was how far back is too far back, right? I mean, Scheffler's kind of putting the heat on. Rahm's putting the heat on. Like, how far back is too far back? And as this conversation, like literally in the middle of this conversation, Rory McIlroy ducks his head underneath like our set and goes, "Can I use that bathroom?" And we're like, "Sure, Rory McIlroy, right? Sure, it's available, it's open, right?" Like, because it runs parallel to like 14 or whatever. And then on his way out, Kyle says, "Rory, we're talking about how far back is too far back." In the middle of his round, Kyle says, "We're talking."
Yeah, he's on like the 11th hole or whatever.
Yeah, 11. How far back is too far back? And without missing a beat, Rory goes, "Not eight," because he was eight shots back at the moment. Yeah. So Rory McIlroy knew exactly how far off the lead was. He knew that that was not too far back, and he was able to come up with that on an on-the-spot post-bathroom break interview by Kyle.
Yeah, which is like, when would that ever happen in a NFL game? It wouldn't. It just wouldn't, right?
In the middle of competition, LeBron James. You go up to LeBron and say, "Hey, you guys are down 12 with six to go. You think you can still come back?"
While he's still, like right after he goes to the bathroom, as he's walking back to the court from the bathroom,
right?
Like, it's just, but stuff like that happens all the time, right? Like there was a quote or there was a thought in the book that was, and I remember where we were standing, Rick, at the Phoenix Open, me, you, and Joe Musso, and I said, "Oh." I said this out loud to you guys. I said, the Phoenix Open is what Liv thinks it is. Mm-hmm. And I remember we were standing there and I said it and Joe was like, "Gotta tweet it." And that ended up as a thought in this book. And I don't know, like, I think being together at events like that, sorry, Patrick, we're making you jealous, but being together at events like that engenders a lot of like interesting dialogue and friction, not bad friction, but like good friction of like, that results in like fun and interesting takes.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Robert Half research indicates 9 out of 10 hiring managers are having difficulty hiring. If you have open roles, chances are you're feeling this too. That's why you need Robert Half. Our specialized recruiting professionals engage with our proprietary AI to connect businesses of all sizes with highly skilled talent in finance and accounting, technology, marketing and creative, legal, and administrative and customer support. At Robert Half, we know talent. Visit roberthalf.com today.
These illustrations in here.
Yeah.
They are getting, in my opinion, how do I phrase this? They're getting like deeper.
Yeah.
Like you have to know more to get them. It's like the sicker you are, the more you like them.
Yes. Yes. That I don't really touch those. Like Jason Page is the illustrator. He does work for a lot of different independent golf media companies, including Fried Egg and No Lineup. He basically runs the underground independent golf media illustration business. But he's done this in the newsletter too. It's kind of his own interpretation, the way that I interpret the sea or like a moment or the season through my words. He does it with his photos. And so while what he illustrates might be something I wrote in the book, it also might not be. Like, it's just the way that he sort of interpreted what was happening. My favorite one is actually on page 119. And it's of the gentleman that was hitting golf balls in the riverbed next to the Open Championship while it was happening. Just out by himself. I think those are windmills in the background. Mm-hmm. And he's just pounding balls right next to Brian Harman shooting, you know, 67 at Hoylake. And the illustration just says believe. And it's like this kind of funny, but also kind of serious look at how golf is something that, like, you would never see somebody taking batting practice next to Yankee Stadium during the World Series, right? Like, that would be so weird. And yet here we are with golf. And he did a really good job of kind of conveying that.
That is so funny.
There was a porta potty one too.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
I thought that's where you were going with the Rory story, Rick.
I think this is the porta potty. Is this the Spieth porta potty?
I think it's the
fact that I have to ask which
this is, like, this was a take.
Yeah, I think it's the ROM one from Riviera.
Oh god. Oh, that guy.
The fact that there are multiple porta potties this could be is a very normal thing.
Yes. Is it the TIO take?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. It was.
That's why I said that guy. John Rahm was the king of TIO.
Oh, yeah.
Go ahead, Kyle.
Well, I was going to say is Kevin Van Valkenburg had this take that there should be one tournament a year where you don't get any TIO. You just play the ball wherever it is. If it's behind a scoreboard, if it's behind a grandstand, sorry. Hit a better shot. Play better.
On the ROM thing, it's very interesting, and I'm very curious to get your take on this, Kyle. Reading it now, when things obviously come out after it's published, and it's a very up-to-date book. You're talking about a book from 1 year.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, everything seems to change overnight. And how is there any fear of that happening as you're writing it? Like, does the perspective change, or is it solely looking back at what happened and how you felt when it happened?
I think it's more so that, but also, you know, think about how boring our Decembers usually are. Like, I've not really in the past feared, this is a unique time in golf, but I've not really in the past ever feared, like, oh, something's going to go down in December that's going to change everything. And so this to me is like a one-off year for that. So it's not something that I will even factor in the future, just because it was so bizarre. But it does. I didn't go back through every ROM thing, because I basically had to get it into the printer like 3 days before that. So I was like, whatever, I'm not going to touch it. But I'm sure there's a couple of things in there that, not even ROM specific, but just the dynamics of the PGA Tour and LIV, that I would have written differently if I had written it knowing that ROM had already gone. But I don't know that it really changes a ton as it relates to how I view him. I think I still mostly view him the same in terms of what I wrote in the book, because I didn't really write about his relationship with LIV in the book.
Going back to having to play every single shot as it lies, if you're Cam Young, Patrick, and your ball goes into a cup holder in a, are you out, or do you have to take your golf club and smash the cup holder to get the ball to come out, and then you can proceed?
I think the play would be to somehow get underneath it and kind of go pool shot through the bottom and pop it.
Yeah.
Right. Because the cup holders have little holes in them for leakage and stuff.
I think the question becomes, can you take an unplayable in this scenario?
If this whole one tournament is play the ball at, no.
Well, what if you hit a ball in the middle of a lake? Is that different than taking?
If you can see it, you got to play it.
Okay. Okay. So you'd rather hit it in the middle of a lake than be in a cup holder.
For sure.
That would be sick.
You know, they used to, in the original, we've gone back into history quite a bit today. Back when golf was first invented, or somewhere around then, they used to have a club called a rut iron. And that was designed in case you hit your ball into a rut, which is in like the original 13 rules. You know, what happened if your ball's in a rut, you got to play it as it lies. This is like a, you know, picture the edge of a garden, or like a little drainage pipe that's unfinished going across a fairway. They had a club for that.
I love it.
I mean, that's it. That is crazy.
We need to go back to
a cup holder club.
We need to go back to 13 rules, Greg.
It's the rules are an amazing thing on a couple fronts. One, you could go to 13 rules, and you could probably figure out a way to do that. But what amazes me about the rules is all of these situations, many of them normal sport moments that happen, there's a rule that covers it. I mean, I have never seen a situation where we didn't know what to do.
Yeah.
Like there was no rule. Maybe it was applied wrong or it's the wrong rule or there was a bad call, but there's never been a situation where we don't know what to do.
Well, that's the that's why I mean, it is a very normal sport thing that the golf rule book continues to expand. I would love to see some stats on how much it has expanded compared to other leagues' rule books, because you have all these like sub points, like rule 27A, you know,
C.6
Roman numeral. Yeah. Like, and it applies to very specific things, which is, yeah, the don't get me started on that. Rick, in the one of the appendices, I did strokes gained for the year. Mm-hmm. Did you know that I use Data Golf? Did you know that Scottie Scheffler led in strokes gained total, strokes gained tee to green, strokes gained ball striking, strokes gained off the tee, strokes gained approach, and was third in strokes gained around the green?
I'm not surprised.
And he won twice. How's that possible?
That's the sick part, man. I do wonder if we are going to look back. There's either going to be a hard correction where he wins five or six times this year, or we're going to look back and say, wow, what a missed opportunity.
The fact that he was third in strokes gained around the green just like blew my mind.
I mean,
to be as good as he was from like with his ball striking and also be third in strokes gained around the green was just outrageous. Patrick, I did something in here that I know you love, which is the five. It's my all NBA team, but for golf, like the five guys that mattered. Okay. Any do you have any qualms with these five? Scheffler, Hovland, Rory, Rahm, Brooks.
Scheffler, Victor, Rory, Rahm, Brooks.
I can give you my second team if you want.
Well, hold on. Don't do that yet.
My first inclination is Taylor Gooch.
Sure.
Why not?
My second one is... Nah, I think that's probably right. In any order, correct? It's just like a starting five for an NBA team.
The thing is, you always have to think, okay, if not one of these guys, who is guy six that would take the spot? And I don't know if I have a sixth. I mean... A couple of major winners, but
Homa and Clark, maybe.
Would be interesting.
Second team was Harmon, Homa, Clark, Fleetwood, Fitzpatrick.
Fleetwood had an unbelievable stat year and just never wins. I'm working on something now where he's like, it's crazy how good Fleetwood was, but didn't get anything done.
And then my third team is actually Ludwig, Ricky, Cantlay, Morikawa, and Bryson.
Okay.
God, if Ludwig played like two more months, he would have been on the first team.
I know. But I think I thought the top five was very clear cut. I mean, Brooks
I think you're right.
Brooks was statistically the worst, but he won his fifth major. Like that's an easy inclusion. And the other four, it's like, yeah, I mean, those were kind of the guys, you know?
Yeah. They were the big four. So they accounted for those five accounted for 7, 11, 14 wins and two majors. Yeah. And that's with Scotty only getting two. Last thing we'll get out of here. I want to circle back on this rut iron. So I was reading about this
this rut a sentence that's never been said.
A forerunner of the sand wedge. The rut iron was made for digging a ball out of cartwheel ruts. That is literally because horses and carts were used for maintenance.
Not a golf cart.
Right. So literally, think about those thin, skinny, if your ball was in one of those, I'd be furious. That's way worse than a divot in a fairway. A cartwheel rut. These cart tracks are barely wider than a golf ball. The Rut Iron was a lofted specialty club designed to flip the ball out of a rut to safe ground. Then this article would go on to say how young Tom Morris loved his Rut Iron, and he would swing sharply down with the lofted little cleek, and Tommy launched high approaches that stopped or even backed up when they hit the green. So the rut iron king, young Tom Morris.
Rick, I can get you one on eBay for $450 right now.
You should do that in your Rick Run giveaways.
Seems a bit steep for a Rut Iron.
It's like, I've got three of them that I paid less for.
Yeah,
that's tough. If it was used by young Tom Morris, I'm in.
Yeah, for sure.
I'll let you know.
What are you going to say, KP?
I was going to say, can I read one of the thoughts just to kind of end the...
Yes, read it, and then I'll go through all the info on where to get it, stuff like that.
Cool. So this is number 224. We didn't even talk about the Ryder Cup. I do a ton on the Ryder Cup, but this is right before the Ryder Cup. One of my favorite normal sport moments of the year also came at the Tour Championship when, because of weather delays, the event spilled into a Dallas Cowboys preseason game for me here in Dallas. They moved the Tour Championship to some other channel that was supposed to be carrying Jeopardy. And all I could think about was how many folks were going to flip on their evening viewing of Jeopardy, looking to be challenged and amused by knowledge around famous structural engineers or Hungarian monarchs from the Middle Ages. And instead, we're going to be greeted by a big Spanish man screaming expletives at a hole in the ground, or a young Norwegian dressed in fluorescent orange and moth. Moth. Like, I don't know. I thought about this during the Open Championship when they did the waggle counter. I was like, what if somebody is getting on NBC or turning on NBC, trying to like watch Meet the Press and have their coffee, and they've got like, you know, Victor Hovland getting shat on by a bird.
I forgot about that
too. And something called a waggle counter on their screen. Like, what would they be like? What is going on?
The best sport, the most normal sport. Normal Sport 3, available on paperback, audiobook, your digital version. Past years, listen, they aged gracefully. You can go read them again. A normalsport.com available now. KP, anything else?
I appreciate you guys dedicating a whole episode to this. I always enjoy talking about it. It's a fun time of year. I hope a ton of people read the book, and looking forward to more normal sport moments even this weekend. I'm sure we'll get one at the PNC.
We get access to your normal brain all year round, and now the people can have it in a different form as well. Big thanks to producer Josh, who does all the hard work behind the scenes. Patrick McDonald, who is that real?
You know, sometimes you just got to grow up, Rick.
Wow.
Has changed?
Wow.
His Twitter handle?
I have.
Is this real or is this a troll?
It's real. I have kept it under a new name, but the main account has changed to become more professional. It's like you never want to grow up, but you do.
So it is now Pat McDonald CBS. Do you want us to call you Pat moving forward?
No, dude. It's like the character limit on it. I couldn't even do like Patrick McDonald's the max 15. Someone already had it.
Oh, you couldn't even do Patrick McDonald 1.
No, I couldn't. Not allowed.
I'm coming for that trophy in your little handle there, by the way, Pat.
Just take it, man. Morale's low here.
Did you save amateur status, or can I go grab it?
Oh, I saved it. Come on.
Okay, good job.
Yeah. I'm blocked by a lot of people. I told you this in Vegas.
This is just, okay.
Pat, you're blocked McDonald. By a lot of people?
Yes.
Who doesn't like Pat McDonald CBS?
Well, now they're going to look at it and be like, why did I block Pat McDonald CBS? And then it's going to be like, boom, joke's on you.
Yeah,
you know,
love it.
Call an ambulance, but for you.
Chess, baby.
And they're going to unblock me.
I don't know if that's how it's going to go, but
and then reblock.
Oh. Guarantee yeah, definitely reblock. What an ending. Threw me off track here. Greg Ducharme, you better not change the real GFD, Greg, or I'm in big trouble.
No, ice of fire. Can't do that. Can't do that.
Unless it's ice of fire.
I won't say never, because I've learned my lesson from Patrick just now, but it's not in the It's not in the plans.
Not to mention John Rahm too a week ago.
Yeah, good point.
I mean, I do have that account name too. If we're
you have John Rahm. You have John Rahm PGA.
I've John Rahm Live Golf. I've got.
Do you really
in the chamber as well?
If you could sell it, you could sell it to him.
You seriously own that?
Yeah.
No, are you being serious?
Yeah, swear to God.
Wow.
The name is Johnny Rahm on the account.
Is it at John Rahm Live or at John Rahm Live Golf?
Live Golf.
You should sell this to him.
You don't have an H in it, do you?
No H.
Didn't Live put out something with an H in it?
The word search.
Was that real? Was that a?
That's me. Johnny Rahm.
Wow.
Wow. There's all right. Another burner. Patrick has burner accounts. So that's what we just learned.
Dude, that is funny.
I've got like 12 more.
He probably owns some.
Are you the one spreading all these rumors?
Yeah. I'm replying to myself half of the day.
Kyle Porter is available on Twitter at Kyle Porter CBS. You can find me at Rick Rungood. This has been The First Cut. We'll catch you next time.
It only takes 2 minutes of sheer horror.
A new Paramount Plus original docuseries.
We were dealing with a serial killer preying on elderly women.
A cold-blooded killer hidden in plain sight.
He was suffocating people with pillows.
Leaving corpses all over Texas.
How did it happen?
I was responsible for her. The guilt is immeasurable. They covered it up.
Pillowcase Murders, now streaming exclusively on Paramount Plus.